right, it's time again for another GoldSeek.com radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Charles Goyette. Well, Charles Goyette penned The Dollar Meltdown, the New York Times bestseller, as well as his latest Red and Blue and Broke All Over, Restoring America's Free Economy. Welcome back, Charles Goyette.
Chris, great to speak with you again.
Well, let's start off with the first government shutdown in 17 years. You know, the political wrangling appears to hinge primarily on the health care bill, but the administration wants everyone to receive benefits. Meanwhile, Medicare, though, and Medicaid payments will continue. The opposition says no way. Bickering has led to a shutdown in some basic services. Most government agencies are expected to run, though, without closing their doors, at least for a few days to weeks. In your opinion, what are the lasting impacts of this event on the economy?
The lasting impact is very, very bad because, once again, this is a sideshow. Look, the Republicans can lock arms with one another to pretend to fight Obamacare, but they're not serious even about that. They're politically posturing in this regard because, after all, what is the template that the Republicans wish to replace it with? It's Romney care. It's Republican care. It's Boehner care. Nobody in the Republican Party makes a good, coherent argument for a true free market healthcare system that is more widely accessible and more affordable to all people. So they're fighting the state socialist healthcare system with the intent of replacing it with another state socialist healthcare system, but the one that will have their fingerprints on it rather than Obama's fingerprints on it. In the meantime, the real issue that we should be paying attention to is not the shutdown of the government, but it's effectively the long-term shutdown of the currency in our economy.
And I think it's a good segue into just what occurred the last time we saw this debate over the debt ceiling and related issues. You know, we did see the precious metals surge higher. Gold, of course, closed over $1,900 an ounce. And that's not to say that we're going to see a lockstep repeat this time, but folks start to become concerned when they see government shutdown, I think, understandably. Are we going to, you think, see some upward pressure as a result of this as people turn to safe haven investments?
This is the beginning of the fiscal year, the fiscal year 2014. At the end of this year, what will the configuration of federal economics be? The government will be bigger. The debt will be much larger. Spending will have grown. The Fed will have printed more money, created more fiat money out of thin air. You know, with the conjunction of one of my books, in fact, The Dollar Meltdown years ago, I did a chart that got circulated quite widely. It was very popular. It correlated the increases. In fact, I dealt with this in one of the chapters of the book, increases in the national debt ceiling with the increase in the price of gold. So it's not fixed. It's not locked in. It doesn't have to be, you know, a one-to-one move. But over the long trend, we know what happens when they raise the national debt ceiling, that visible government spending will certainly go up under that scenario, but the hidden government spending goes up as well. So the prospect for precious metals is ultimately much, much higher.
No, I think it's a really good point because it's easy to forget that at the end of the day, I mean, this really is a dollar story. I mean, folks can procure precious metals for many reasons, whether it be speculative or portfolio insurance, all generally good ideas. But ultimately, inflation comes down to the erosion of purchasing power resulting from the national currency and its decline. And as you say, we've seen this trend for many years. But in the last 3 years, the greenback has stabilized somewhat, despite the recent weakness we've had here. Is this simply a pause on the way to lower levels for the greenback, the U.S. dollar?
This is all relative. You know, if things get really, really, really bad in Europe, you know, the dollar seems to rise relative to the European currency or some other currency. But this is all sleight of hand. This is all, you know, you go down to Times Square and you can watch guys playing shell games. This is effectively a shell game. Look, all paper currencies are irredeemable. There's not a redeemable paper currency in the world. There's not a currency that is a claim check on something. You cannot go to the central bank of any nation and turn your paper money in for something real. It's except for more of the same that they can print up in the basement or create electronically. So the value of all paper currencies, of all electronic currencies, is in decline. The purchasing power of all currencies is in long-term decline. So when we hear that the dollar is stable, Well, I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, I guess if, you know, if you have receivables in euros or in yen, these things matter to you. But for most people, it's like saying, you know, that the dollar is descending at a 19% rate, but the other Titanic, the euro is descending at a 21% rate, so the dollar looks very stable. You know, none of this is true. It is simply not stable, and it will not be stable as long as it can be created willy-nilly by an act of, federal bureaucrats, or as long as the government believes that it can give people something for nothing by deficit spending. So, I mean, all of this is a shell game to say that the dollar is up or the dollar is down against what? Against other paper currencies that are also inherently worthless. So, and the shell game can go on for a long time. I mean, people can be taken in for a long time. The crowd can grow bigger. More and more can be, convinced to lay a $20 down on the table and try to win the shell game and be deceived by it. You know, play three-card Monte on Broadway in New York. I mean, it can go on for a very long time, and indeed it has, but it cannot go on forever.
In this theme of street card hustles, if you will, are we losing our right to such a high AAA credit rating status with, such enormous debt and very little organized effort, I think, to clear the system or leadership in that area, for that matter? If we lose our moniker as the world's reserve currency, how could that impact the economy and the precious metals sector?
Well, it's actually a timely question. It's a very precarious situation, and actually there are people that are suggesting that President Obama, if Congress does not pass to his liking or in his calendar a statutory debt ceiling increase, that he go ahead and authorize the spending of the money anyway, rendering effectively null the role of Congress to create borrowing authority for the government. Look, if they do something like that, they further risk the peril that we're in now of the rest of the world in wide-eyed astonishment looking at us and understanding that this is nothing, you know, this is nothing but a flim-flam. We can issue currency against Federal Reserve operations. We can borrow money relentlessly from the rest of the world, and we do not even have to have statutory authority. What happens when they want to be paid back for their bonds? Hey, what happened to the rule of law? The president pierced the statutory debt ceiling without regard to the rule of law. So this will get the world's attention if they do this. But in any event, the world is slowly waking up to the peril of the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. I mean, look, China is moving. It's not. It used to be surreptitiously moving, in the direction of gold. There's nothing hidden about it now. And if they end up linking the Chinese yuan to gold in a meaningful way, I mean, not another currency flim-flam, but in some sort of link in which there is some sort of redeemability, then China will have secured its place as the number one commercial nation of the world on the world stage for the next 100 years, and the United States will have slipped and fallen badly.
I mean, we're certainly reading endless articles on this topic, a lot of conjecture regarding whether or not China and Russia are attempting to set up a regional reserve currency that has sound money backing, at least their government operations with regard to procuring the precious metals indicates that they have.
Chris, it's even bigger than at the level of the state, because here in the state, you know, the American state taxes precious metals at a penalty rate. The American state constantly is at war with gold and silver, trying to keep the American people from availing themselves of its safety. But in China, on the other hand, the people are encouraged to own gold and silver. So it's not just the state enterprise, but it's the people themselves. The people in China, look, these are among the biggest savers in the world. They understand the value of gold and silver. They do not believe, because they don't have a lying state or elected class that tells them, we're going to take care of your retirement, we're going to take care of your health care, we're going to take care of you in your golden age. When you're old, don't worry, everything will be covered. They don't have that. So we've been bamboozled, we've been beguiled, we've been seduced by politicians promising that they will take care of our retirement for us, they will take care of our health care for us, and so Americans have become slipshod as far as saving goes, while the Chinese have been some of the biggest savers in the world, knowing full well that they have to take care of themselves. And when they save, do they want to save irredeemable paper currencies? No, they have a predisposition to gold.
You bring up this concept of government collusion against the precious metals. Imagine, for instance, if the U.S. dollar was taxed at 20-30%. It'd become a worthless relic of a currency. Well, that's precisely what's happened to sound money here in the United States. And I know your comrade and friend of the show here, Ron Paul, has written extensively and talked extensively about this idea of simply removing capital gains tax off gold and silver. It really has no place there whatsoever. It's a penalty for those who wish to protect their savings, but I think it's a systemic penalty to 300 plus million Americans in that the real currency, the sound money, real money, loses its attractiveness. Any comments?
This policy is witness to the fact that the issuers of the currency even know that they are involved in a flimflam. Look, when the currency is sound, when the currency is desirable, you don't have to persuade anybody under force of law, under penalty of prison. You don't have to force people with legal tender laws to use it. People desire, people prefer sound currencies, and they will flock to them. They'll demand them in their commercial transactions. They'll use them for their savings. People desire sound, reliable currencies. So when do you need legal tender laws to force people to use currencies? Only when the currency is suspect and people would otherwise use something different. But you've alluded to something actually that Nobel Prize winner Friedrich Hayek championed, and that is, you know, to let currencies compete and let the if the dollar is desirable in equal circumstances on equal footing and no more punitive tax treatment of competing currencies like gold and silver, then let the people decide. Nobody, look, if Paul Krugman and Ben Bernanke want to trade in, who knows, if they want to trade in IMF special drawing rights, if they want to save their money in IMF fiat drawing rights, they're free to do. Why shouldn't they be free to do so? Let them make their. Now, nobody may want to take that currency in 20 years when they retire and they want to use it to buy retirement. But, they're, PhDs, these are Princeton professors. You know, they're the ones that have tried to order the economic affairs of our whole nation to our peril. So let them go ahead and decide to save in special drawing rights or any currency that they prefer. But let the rest of us have a choice as well.
It's a theme. They talk about confidence. Back to the Lehman catastrophe there, the CEO Fold complaining on CNBC about these devilish short sellers. It's the short sellers taking down my stock. It's the short sellers destroying my company. And of course, we find out a few weeks later, yeah, the short sellers took down your company because it was riddled with mountains of toxic debt. An apt parallel to what we're seeing with the United States. Sure, we've got the AAA rating, but just like in 2008, where it took months, if not years, before the rating agencies finally came clean on many of the companies and countries out there with this toxic debt on their balance sheets, we too, on the United States balance sheet that has to be dealt with.
Well, you're right that it does have to be dealt with. And look, I understand why, the dollar appears to be more desirable than some other currencies for brief interludes. I've likened it, Chris, in the past to you take your family, your friends, your company, your employees, whatever, to the park, and you're out playing softball, or you've spread the blankets and you're having a picnic, and the kids are romping and stomping and having a great time, and all of a sudden it clouds up and it starts to rain. So everybody grabs the picnic basket and they head out under the bohio or under the ramada, to wait for the little rain cloud to blow past, and then they'll go enjoy themselves again. That's the dollar. That's the dollar. That's fine. Okay, there's a crisis. You don't know who to trust. You know that when you invest in the dollar, you say they may print these things at will, but even if they have to print it, they'll pay our money back. Our treasury will be paid, even if it's depreciated dollars. But whatever, we do not want to invest in rubles or yuan or euros or whatever the other currency may be in the crisis during the circumstance. And that's fine for a few minutes for some people for certain needs. But I will tell you, it is for people that are are interested in insurance against a currency crisis, for long-term capital preservation, and even in times like this, I believe the gold price where it is now, even just for the pure pleasure of profit, you wouldn't want to live under the Ramada at the park. You know, you wouldn't want to try to withstand a hurricane there. It might be fine for the afternoon sprinkles, but when the real storm blows in, or when you huddle in for the night or for difficult times, you know, the Ramada is no place to be. You want to be in a sound structure.
We hear constantly from technicians and many folks out there that, well, I'll have plenty of time to jump back on the bandwagon when gold gets above that resistance at 1500, silver over 26. These debacles and issues come like a thief in the night. If you knew your house was going to burn down next week, of course you bought insurance this week. But we don't know when the threat is going to occur. I mean, it can come like a lightning strike. And that's why everybody has to have some precious metals insurance. Now, this wasn't the case 50, 60, 70, 100 years ago. Why? Because the currency had some backing. And even after the 70s, when Nixon slammed the gold window down, there was an enormous amount of silver money in circulation, which I think buoyed the economy somewhat. It's something that I've never heard any academic discuss.
Well, it was even more than that. I mean, look, we had growth that was the envy of the world. We had 6% economic growth. We had 4%. Even in the 70s, I think we were managing 4% economic growth. We were the manufacturing hegemon of the world. China wasn't even really in the game. There was effectively no China. You know, Russia wasn't even really, considered one of the producing nations. That wasn't even in the game. We had billions of people around the world under the heel of the boot of the state in communist systems that weren't competing with us. We were strong. We were robust. We were powerful. And so even if gold had been eliminated, people believed, you know, the American dream, American productivity, and so on and so forth. Well, they've squandered that pretty well. I mean, we could barely eke out 2% economic growth now with the growth of the state. I'll tell you, better than a chart that correlates the stepped up increases in the national debt ceiling and the price of gold, people ought to look at a chart, and this is the theme of my most recent book, Red and Blue and Broke All Over. People ought to look at a chart that correlates the growth of liberty, or the inversely, the growth of the state versus the prosperity of the people. And so you can clearly understand, when you familiarize yourself with these arguments, that as the American state has grown bigger, the American dream has been suffocated. And I will tell you, the story of the dollar is evident. The long-term outcome of this story of the dollar is evident in this brinksmanship that is going on in Washington now. The reason that these shutdowns grow more severe, the reasons the divides grow sharper, the reasons the political rancor grows, and it's not just rancor between the Republicans and Democrats internally. Within the Republican Party, there's nothing more hateful than between a couple of factions in the Republican Party and the way they diss one another in their collegial gentlemen's club. But all of this is evidence that the pie itself is shrinking, that there are increasing demands for the American military overseas empire, for the military-industrial state, for the welfare state, for the warfare state. There are increased demands for the maturing baby boomers and their retirement needs, for promises the politicians have made for prescription drug care, for health care, Obamacare. The demands are increasing, but the pie itself is shrinking. And so characteristically, the debates become more rancorous, more heated, more voluble, and there is a lot more of this ahead in our future. But I think that people that look at the state of the dollar and the alternative of gold and silver to the state of the dollar can, better than looking at a chart, better than looking at a trend line, an overhead resistance or a support level or something, look at the visible signs and the behavior of the governing classes as they go at one another's throat. Their very political survival is at stake, and so it becomes very bitter indeed, because they've cultivated constituencies that are now utterly dependent on their promises, and there's not enough pie to go around for everybody.
No, you talk about lack of growth, and if we look at 1980 to 2000, you know, that 20-year period there, as I think is evidenced in the charts, particularly by the Dow and the equities markets, the phenomenal growth. We don't have to even look at the GDP figures. I mean, just take a look at stocks on average. It was an incredible period of growth. And so the correlation, I think, between debt levels came insignificant. But today, we don't have that luxury of excess growth or even, I think, acceptable growth levels. So debt becomes a huge factor, taking us back at least to the 70s. And I think we're seeing signs that the everyday person recognizes this, that this is why silver is flying off the shelves. Silver eagles, they cannot keep them in stock. U.S. Mint showed that we had sold more silver eagles this time of the year than all of 2012. The Nomoyen, if you will, recognizes that this is a genuine threat to everyone's wealth, the loss of purchasing power here. Well, as we wrap up, any other topics?
No, you covered them all, except to say you talked about the growth of the economy, the American economy, and the stock market during the boom years. You look at a chart now, you have to ask yourself, how does an economy that barely musters 2% growth justify a stock market that's done 20%? Speaking of correlations, as we have done on your program, if you look at the overlay, at the correlation of the wave after wave of the climbing stock market to these heights, and overlay that with the round after round of quantitative easing, you see the correlation is very clear. They're the only wind beneath the wings of the stock market here has been money printing, a perilous situation indeed.
Exactly, and we're watching that balance sheet expand at an enormous pace. The last check, $3.3 trillion, roughly $1 trillion a year, and the Fed can't even pull the trigger on reducing it $5 or $10 billion a month. It's comical. Even if they did drop it by $5 or $10 billion a month, or even $100 billion, it would amount to about $100 billion a year. That's still roughly $900 billion a year added to the Fed's balance sheet. Please tell folks more about your bestsellers, as well as any contact information.
CharlesGoyette.com. My website has been down for a few years while I've concentrated on writing projects, but it'll be up in another week or two. And that's about all. Ron Paul's America on radio stations all over the country, twice daily radio commentary on current events and news. Make sure your favorite radio station knows that they can have Ron Paul's America, the twice daily commentary. All they have to do is contact the syndicator for that. Their favorite radio station knows how to do that. And that's it, Chris.
Now, we're going to put links up to everything you've mentioned there to encourage our listener base. I want to encourage everyone to bookmark those sites ASAP. So, as always, Charles Goyette, we want to thank you for your comments today.
Wonderful to speak with you again, Chris. Thank you.